Would you introduce yourself, please?
Hello, I am Megan Weiler.
So let's see. We've got a ranch in Colorado. We've got a mom who loved music. We've got NYC. We've got acting school. We had a boyfriend in a punk band. You're self-taught. There's bass guitar and zither. There's London and kids. And we're done. There's nothing left to talk about. How did you make it from the ranch? And we'll go back to mom in a second. But how did you make it from the ranch in Colorado to the big bad New York City?
So yes, I grew up on a ranch, and we didn't have electricity. We didn't have indoor plumbing until I was a teenager, which everyone finds extremely fascinating and unusual, and probably because it was totally unusual. And I had, in the tiny little elementary school where I went to school in the mountains, there was a woman who was the choir teacher, the music teacher, the theater teacher, and she would have us, the whole school would write 3 plays a year, and the whole school was required to be involved, and they would all write the scripts and write the music, and I fell absolutely in love with music and theater. And it was, you know, everyone says you can trace back everything to one person sometimes. And for me, it was this woman, Becky Barnes.
Wow.
And everyone was required to do it because in those days, you know, public schools actually had arts funding. So,
yeah, I get it.
So we got to do that. And that became my passion. And she came from New York City. She had trained at NYU. And so I said, okay, going to NYU and I'm going to study acting. And that's what I did.
So you went to Tisch.
Yeah.
Name of punk band?
Eyeball.
So what year was that?
That would have been 1992, 93.
Wow. So that was like the edge of grunge and stuff, mm-hmm. where punk was kind of...
And I would say, you know, we called ourselves a punk band, but I would say we were kind of on the edge of grunge.
We were listening to a lot of Kurt Cobain and Soundgarden and all that.
I mean, ish. We were more kind of Pavement, Sebado, Guided by Voices.
Right.
That kind of indie rock.
So were these kids. Like no song over 2 minutes?
Probably. Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. Wow, we're gone. Next.
And so what happened was I had a boyfriend when I first moved to New York. Had a boyfriend. He was in a band and, you know, great guitar player, and he could tell that I was very, you know, musical and sang. And he said, hey, I'm going to buy, for your birthday, I'm going to buy you a bass. You can learn bass
Dina
so
Weymouth
quickly.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he taught me, you know, the basics. And then within, I think, 2 months, I was in Eyeball. So I have to say I was probably an absolutely terrible bass player at the time. But I you know.
But you did it.
I did it. And
you
we
did what you had to do.
And we... yeah, I mean, you know, I kind of got my feet wet at CBGB's and Brownies, and
wow.
Played Mercury Lounge. You know, these were all the places that I had heard about as a kid, and then suddenly I was playing there.
Wow. So then there's London. So give me the save me some of the stuff here. Give me some of the trajectory. So you're in Eyeball, you're doing acting.
So there was a kind of push me pull you between theater and music. I was always in bands and I was always in theater and I was doing films on, you know, when I landed a role. And so I was always in between these two worlds. And then I was on tour with a kind of gypsy Balkan punkish band called the Lumies. And I was singing with them and they asked me to go on tour with them and they were a really fun party band. So we went to London, and I sent an email to a guy I had met in Italy the year before who was a music producer and a composer, and I said, hey, do you want to come to one of our gigs? And he said, I'd love to, and do you want to have dinner? And that's now my husband. So
well done.
Yeah, so we did a long distance thing between New York and London, and the first night when we had that first dinner, I said to him, look, you know, I like you, I think you're cool, but just so you know, I am never leaving New York City. And he said, very smartly, okay, no problem. Well, I love New York.
Yep.
2 years later, I moved to London.
Okay, so you moved to London, and what happens there?
So the move to London was a marker of stopping acting. and completely diving headfirst, and only, you know, music became the centrifugal force, which had been moving in that direction for years, and then that's when it really kind of set fire. So I moved from New York to London, and we got married shortly thereafter and had a couple kids. And during that time, I had I released an album. I wrote my first album and worked with the same producer I worked with on this album. His name's Adem Ilhan. So Adem was a friend of my husband's. They had composed some stuff together for some TV stuff, but he was a beautiful solo artist. He was on Domino Records at the time, and I loved his music. And I said, we were thinking about who was going to produce my album. And I said, who produced Autumn's stuff? And Pete said, oh, he produces all of his own stuff. And I said, man, I wish he could do my album. He's just so amazing. And he said, well, I'll call him. Calls him up, says, my wife's looking for a producer. Can we send you her demos? He's like, yeah. Sent them over, called back literally like an hour later and was like, I'm in.
You make your way to LA.
Yeah.
And you made where'd you make the first record?
London.
Made the first record in London. So now, when did you start residing here full time?
2 years ago.
Okay. So now there's a big chasm here, because I'll do it as the press release says it in the full announcer voice. Her first album in 9 years. So
I think it's eight.
Well, you see, that's what they say, nine.
Well.
See, I read the press release and then I did the math too. But obviously, life happened.
Yeah. So I released my first album, my record release gig, I was 9 months pregnant. I shot my music video at 4 days before I gave birth to my second child. So let's say it was an interesting timing. I have worked, you know, steadily as a session singer. I do a lot of work on film scores, actually, and commercials, and I've always collaborated with a lot of people, sung on a lot of different people's stuff, and you know, worked with longtime collaborators. But my son, about a year and a half after my daughter was born, he had just some unusual medical issues that had happened from birth. And doctors had been saying to us the whole time, oh, don't worry, it's just, you know, he's got a developmental delay because of this, or, you know, he had reflux, so there's that. And so I had a kind of intuition that that wasn't the case. But, you know, you kind of just want to think for the best and go with what the doctors are saying. And then by the time he was two, there was some more unusual stuff happening. So we saw a specialist, and this person said to us, you know, your son has a genetic condition. And that started an odyssey of, you know, kind of the last 8 years, where we've, you know, it's been a journey of trying to figure out what it is. We still don't know. They've mapped his whole genome, and they don't know what the name is. So until another child in the world has the exact same genome map as our son, and that's entered into the international database, it may never have a name. So, you know, he is a beautiful, perfect, amazing human being who is, you know, an incredible gift. And he is the most incredible teacher for me in my life. And he's offered so much. And he's very light on the spectrum of what he has, whatever it is. He just can't process information in the same way as you and I can. And he's had 14 surgeries since he was born. He's 10.
Wow.
And so it started around when he was two. So from two until, you know, recently, actually, he's had a real medical odyssey.
That's a lot.
So as I've said before, it really has been my privilege to prioritize him. But it meant that I was able to continue working for hire to make ends meet.
Yeah.
But I wasn't able to generate material because, you know, that requires a huge amount of you know, the well has to run deep. And my well was pretty dry for a while.
Where did a switch flip where you said, it's time? I've got this all inside me. I need to get it out.
It was maybe 2 years ago. I was having just such frustration because I felt that kind of bubbling. You know, I knew that I needed to do me and my stuff. And I occasionally was trying to write songs and it just felt like, oh, I don't even know how to do it anymore. And a friend of mine said, I was talking with her, really wise woman. I said, you know, I just feel like I'm lost. I don't have it anymore. And she said, well, write a song about that. Oh, I had this real defensive kind of negative reaction to that. I don't even know what I can't write about it. I mean, I'm blocked. How can I write about being blocked? And she was like, okay, just a suggestion. And I literally went home, sat down at the piano, and wrote from start to finish in about 15 minutes, which is a short period of time for me because I'm a long-winded writer. You know, a whole song, and that's the last song on the album called Wake Up.
Wow. So you call your producer and you say, guess what? I'm back.
And he says, I'm on board.
I've been waiting for this.
Yeah, bring it on. So we started recording in June of 2019. So,
oh.
Yeah. So we made the album in June of 2019.
All of it.
Well, most of it in England. And then we came to LA and over the course of that settling in period in LA, I kind of, you know, did some more vocals and we redid one whole song that just didn't feel right. And so the plan was to release the album in April of 2020. So that didn't happen.
The record has been on ice for
a year.
You care a lot if people hear this.
Of course, you want your every single artist, whether you're a painter, an actor, a musician, or whatever.
You do have an ego. It does exist.
Well, and you want the point is not to sit in your room and play it to yourself.
Because
you
we could just do that all day long.
You want people to hear it. You want to touch people's lives.
Right.
That's kind of
But that's
driving force.
But that's tricky stuff. And you also have to be able to do that. Untimely deaths. I'm just gonna focus it on one.
So that is the song Rocket on mm-hmm. the album. One of the first people I met when I moved to New York City from the ranch in Colorado was this young guy, a few years older than me at the time, who was an incredible guitar player. Stevie Ray Vaughan was his mentor. And he was playing in a bunch of rockabilly bands and ended up, you know, I mean, he toured with all the greats over the course of his far too short life. And we were best friends from literally the moment we met until the moment he died. We were really close. And he was great friends with my husband. He was, you know, godfather of my son. And he wrote all these beautiful songs. And when he died, I'm close with his mom, and I said, you know, did he record any of them? Because he spent so much of his life playing for other people, making other people sound great. He never made an album of his own music, which was just such a tragedy because his songs and his voice were immaculate. And there was one song in particular that I always had him play for me, because it was just so incredible. I loved the chorus. And I was hoping that his mom could say, yeah, he's got some demos, here it is. Because I blanked completely on what the chorus was. I couldn't hear the melody. So she said, nope, there's nothing. We've cracked into his computer and his phone, there's nothing. And, you know, on top of all the other devastation, I'm like, I just couldn't believe that his music was just like a puff of smoke. So many, many, many months after he died, I had a dream that he came up to me carrying my dad's guitar, which is exactly how we met, smiling, going, "Is this your guitar?" It was an old Harmony guitar. And he did that in the dream. And I said, "You know, that's my guitar," in the dream. And he said, "I'm going to play you a song." And he sat down and he played the song in the dream. And he started singing it. And the whole melody came through in the dream. I woke bolt upright in the middle of the night, woke my husband up, grabbed my phone, turned it on, and I sang everything I could remember from the dream into the phone. And the only lyrics I could remember were, "It's been 7 years now," which was the opening line of the song, and then the melody of the chorus and the verse. So I called his mom and I said, can I put Johnny's song on my album? I don't know the real words. I don't know. I'm going to write a bridge. I'm going to come up with my own words. But, you know, and she was like, "I love that idea. He would love that." And it's like a posthumous collaboration.
It's also the loudest, most rock song on the record.
Yeah.
What is the filter for one of your songs? How do you know? Because you've composed for other people. How do you know a song is yours? What's the filter?
Well, it's there's a lot of vocal harmonies. There's a lot of textural, kind of ambient, but melodic textural sounds. And there's always going to be either a guitar or a piano. There's going to be a rootsy, folky element to it. One thing that Audem and I spoke about and made a very conscious decision about in this album was that we wanted to use kind of stacked harmonies, and we did it in the first album as well, but I think a little bit less, stacked harmonies as instrument, not as vocals. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So it kind of creates its own instrument and texture and, you know, layer to the music, which is, I really love doing that.
So now, are you ready to now take rock star status and take this out there and play it and tour it and do all the things that you haven't done for 8 years?
You know, I think a lot of, I was just, one of my co-writers on a song called Starlight is Anushka Shankar, who's an amazing sitar player, producer, writer, musician. She's just an unbelievable talent. And we were chatting the other day, and she and I were talking about, she's got two little boys, and, you know, it used to be that we would hit the road and tour, you know, 250 days a year, whatever it is, and that was just life. And when you have kids, that's not a choice. Well, some people make that choice, but that's not a choice that I'm going to make. So for me, I am ready to hit the world with it, and I am ready to hit the road with it, but it's going to look a lot different, you know, than it has previously.
So I have invented a thing called a musical sandwich.
Mm.
And what it is two of your songs on the outside, and then you get to pick anything you want in between.